All right, this is November 30th, 2016, courtroom observer conference call, and I guess I'm not sure if do I have anything to report on Standing Rock? Well, I mean, we all know the veterans are going to be there on December 4th, the day before they're supposed to be evicted by Army Corps of Engineers told them to get off the property. I think they did, because it doesn't seem like any of the contractors or whatever they're not even dealing with all the notices, and that, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers, they asked them, said they weren't going to give them a permit until they actually consulted with the Sioux, and they weren't going to do it. They just kept, you know, trying to build their stuff, and they just keep ignoring them. But I think they're losing more and more people, to try to move them off. Like, I know I think the sheriffs are finally getting educated. So this is a good thing, because they've been sent all our documents on what their job really is. And this time they got called, you know, from the people that voted them in, but also they've got calls from all over the world to do their job, which isn't to go from another state to protect a corporation. That's not what anybody voted them in for. And so I think the sheriffs are finally getting the point. It's almost like our documents have more meaning now to them. I'm hoping, anyway.
Well, what I'd heard on the radio was, just once, was that there was people were sending trucks up there with supplies, and the trucks, if they tried to get in, they were going to fine them. Anybody who tried to help them were going to be fined or worse.
When was that?
Last week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's so many people now. There's more of we the people than there are of them now, and I think that a lot of them they're losing people. Plus, it's really hard. I was reading about the infiltrators, that it's been really hard for any of the infiltrators to really do anything, because when you first get there, you have to read their protocol about how to behave, and if anybody, because they're aware of the infiltrators, they have this protocol that says if anybody asks you to do something, you need to talk to an elder, a designated elder first. So I don't think the infiltrators have been able to really get any, you know, much out of it. And I think they caught one guy that was speeding through, and they nailed him. I mean, they caught him, and, it showed that he actually worked for the company. And he was trying to incite something, but they stopped it. So, which is really good.
This is Harley from
Hi,
Vermont.
Harley.
Hey. Hey, I missed you last week, I think. But
yeah, you did. We missed you.
On that, the supplies, I heard that they literally turned away a whole bunch of cots from the Red Cross. They turned the Red Cross back, you know, and they're having medical issues there with frostbite damage.
Yeah.
They're spraying water on them. So there's, you know, there's this kind of, it's negative, but it's a positive leverage that you have against them for human rights abuse.
Right.
And you're very right about this being a huge teachable moment, because I've been trying to mend this sort of gap between the patriots and the, Native protesters online when it comes up and it's contentious. You know, you try to draw the right comparisons and the right information that's going to help them, right? To understand infiltrators is to do what Gandhi did, just to say, I won't do any movement unless it's nonviolent and you follow the rules.
Right. And
so
that's
you have to police yourself.
That's
in your
right,
own
and that's
group.
What they're doing. Yeah.
And that's awesome. But yeah, it's a huge deal for them to realize that a sheriff is elected and all of his deputies could be, you know, out of a job if they don't follow the protocols of the citizens. And
right.
The citizens have take this damn country back one stroke at a time because they've been undermining us and just, you know, eliminating whole sheriff's offices and trying to draw arbitrary lines around the coast 100 miles in is constitution free and this and that, you know, it's but these are great teachable moments. It's like,
they are.
Hey, there is a difference between the state of police and the city of police and the elected sheriff.
Yeah, they're getting their ears full.
So
I was reading this thing that happened in California. It's a civil asset forfeiture racket. Cops seize family's business and life savings without criminal charges.
Laura, you're reverbing. It's hard to hear you. You're doubling.
Huh, I don't know how I'm not. How to not do that. Does it sound like it now?
No, not right that moment.
Okay, can you hear me? Can I say it now? Does it sound like it is or not?
Yeah, it might be somebody else, but it sounds like a reverb.
Okay, it doesn't now or does it?
Not right this moment.
Okay. Well, anyway, so there's this article says civil asset forfeiture racket, which is... anyway, the cop sees family's business and life savings without criminal charges. And so this was in California, and they have this weird thing. It was originally meant for, for organized crime. And they now what they do, they can just go and take your – they took all their money. They took their whole business. They even took their kids' college fund, you know, bank accounts.
Oh, my God. Was this related to drugs?
No.
No.
No, what I mean, well, they had a medical marijuana thing that they had all the licenses for and whatever.
Okay.
I mean, the states. It's so, I mean, this was, it says.
Yeah,
it's called,
back up on this.
What?
Civil forfeiture and all of these rules where the cops take your stuff while you're in the very beginning of a case. Has been under contention, ACLU and everybody, for years now. And some places have reversed those things, and some things places have made it worse. It's state by state, isn't it?
Well, Jerry Brown, he put in a bill to reverse it, but it doesn't go in until January 1st. So I wonder if they're just going crazy right now. So what this is, it says civil asset forfeiture is a nasty legal loophole that allows government thugs to steal your property without charging you with a crime. They can seize your cash, car, bank accounts, jewelry, and even your home or business without arresting you for doing anything wrong. Under this racket, the government proceeds directly against your property. An individual doesn't need to be convicted of a crime, so criminal procedure does not apply. And because the forfeiture is against the property, the owner is a third-party claimant in related court proceedings. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
No, but that's Reagan put that in. Reagan signed that into law, and it's been going on over 30 years, of course. And there's 30 states last year that were trying to reverse it or trying to repeal it. And what they're doing is they just decide, they think you might be doing something, so they come and take your stuff. And then you have to, because it's not you, of course you just read all that, it's not a criminal process, it's a civil process, and they bring charges, so to speak, against your property.
Right.
And then you have to prove that you didn't commit a crime on your property to get it back. I've been fussing with this for like a year and a half myself. I mean, not personally, but after I found out about it like a year and a half ago, it crawls under my skin to know they're doing this.
I am.
Well, and it's, again, I think a place for a paper, you know, John may have already gone there, but it's a breach of due process. It's a wrenching of common sense that, you know, in under laws of equity, that those possessions wouldn't be yours. And, you know, it's been this sort of hyper war on drugs thing that where they came up with it. because they thought, such a great idea, we'll just shut down these great big cartels and these great big drug, you know, operations. Well, anybody who transgresses any one of these arbitrary, you know, drug laws, and I call them arbitrary because they're paternalistic and they're, you know, are used to, you know, control people from self-harm, which is ridiculous. You know, you're going to stop me from hitting myself in the head with a baseball bat if that's my hobby? You know? I mean, so, you know, I mean, I think that the states have realized that those are unsupportable laws and rules. But there's a really crazy example of it in Oklahoma, which has some really regressive nonsense. At a certain point, they bought card readers, and they realized that some drug pushers or whatever are traveling around with money on cards, plastic cards. They probably use that for an anecdotal example, but they literally will, on the side of the road, scan people's money off of their bank cards.
I heard that, too.
Not just, you know, grab whatever they want out of the car, your money or whatever, and, like, prove it. I didn't take any cash that day, you know? But they're really just out of hand with this stuff. But I wanted to give you guys some interesting news on another thing. If you've been following along, they trespassed me and arrested me for, you know, being on my own farm past some arbitrary deadline while I was still in court for the bank. Well, I've been going to court waiting for my turn to pick a jury, because I wanted to drag out the whole thing. I was going to make a show trial out of, you know, who really owned the property that day. You know, I was asking for proof and proper process all along. Well, today I get a call back, belatedly, from the prosecutor, and they're dismissing.
They're dismissing? Well, are they going to give you your property back?
No. This is the criminal side. This is just one stepping stone on my way back to focusing on federal court, where I can get a Title III and due process, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've already gone through, and I filed the Supreme Court of Vermont. They rejected it, you know, with a bunch of information. I filled this case with a bunch of information on a real case number, right? And so it's all precedent. It'll all go for prologue in my new case. But it is not even the judge deciding on the merits, you know, to throw it out or whatever. This is the prosecutor themselves giving up because of all the things I presented them with.
You know, good.
I was writing a script that they did not want to be in the play.
Right.
Oh, yay.
Good for you. That's really good.
Let's pop open something cool to drink.
May I enter something?
Yeah.
Okay. Some of the things you're talking about I can relate to because of me going to court for a number of years. I'm from Indiana. And when we turn our deeds over to the recorder's office, it automatically becomes state property according to the laws. And people don't realize that. That's the reason we're paying property tax. So the state decides what we're supposed to do and what we're not supposed to do to our property. But that's not what I wanted to tell you. I'm just explaining what's been going on with some of these things. Anyway, today I sent. I cannot put anything into court at the present time because they have a $1,000 fine against me and a 2-year sanction and a deposit up in the judicial misconduct court. So I'm stuck, okay? And I sent out 51 affidavits today, court injustice affidavit. And it was 40 pages of witness of my experience of about 20 years and showing how the judges disobey this and ignore that and 33 things I've listed and give some explanation and show what some of the laws are and what they're doing with them. And I'm including the sheriffs, the marshals, and the Chicago FBI because they withheld my court, my summonses so that I couldn't have them delivered. And so I would send all of those papers, my claims, to the sheriffs and the marshals. And then NLA told me to send to the governor, and so I did. And he gave me some instructions that I have followed. And there's why I'm stuck in the judicial misconduct court with a deposit, because everything is frivolous, even though it's fraud, even though it's extortion, even though it's genocide. It doesn't matter. Okay? So I sent those out today, and I already know, because God had showed a person that this I was supposed to do it. Well, dreams don't have to happen. So I asked the Lord, and he said to me, October the 16th, you are opening a gate that has not been opened in many years. Then later in the day, he said, I want to shake them, which I already know they're going to be upset. And then I also heard him say, this is a floodgate of evil being exposed so that righteousness can come forth. And so I already am aware that they're going to attack my Social Security check and the house that I'm believing for very soon. And so I heard what you were saying at the earlier part of the call. So you're telling me what some of the things are. And I personally do not know how to defend myself in that kind of thing. So basically I'm calling you to inform you of what I'm doing, plus ask for prayer.
Okay? Yeah, okay, for sure.
And I sent it out to every courthouse, every federal courthouse in Indiana, which is 8 of them. I've been in 4 of them trying to get justice. And I sent out to every sheriff of each county where those courthouses are, and to every marshal's office. I have sent to every legislator in Indiana and to the Speaker of the House, to the leaders of the Senate, and to the 3 judicial people in the Judicial Commission Committee in the House of Representatives. I've also sent to the President and Vice President. So, plus a few others, which are not officials.
So I don't see your name on here. What's your name again?
Damaris.
Damaris?
Mm-hmm.
How do you spell it?
D-E-M-A-R-I-S. I on my court papers, I'm using God's name for me, which is D-A-M-A-R-I-S. Rhodes
okay.
is my last name.
Okay.
So I'm not able to get into court at this moment, but when I went to the judicial misconduct court, the Lord told me November the 15th, I will reverse the decision. Well, that was the first complaint I sent in. I sent in 3. And he also said the next day after that he wanted it published. Well, none of it has ever happened because they've dismissed everything. But the last time he told me, my power will be in the meeting. Well, I have no idea what that power means, I shouldn't say the power, but the meeting. I have no idea what that is. That's the reason I'm sending to the president and to the vice president, as well as the rest of those people. I'm trying to get everybody's attention, making some noise, okay?
Yeah, good.
So God told me clear back in 1993 that I would win in court. And I've been going at this thing for 20 years.
Wow.
And every time the IRS attacked me, they took my home and they took my business. And I did what I could to save myself, but I didn't know anything. And I still don't know a lot. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a researcher. I'm just doing what God wants me to do. And it will, in due time, come to pass. I'm getting old enough that you'd think I'd quit, but I'm not going to, okay?
Well, that's great. Does John know about this work?
Oh, that's right. Thank you for mentioning that. I'm also sending one to NLA.
Well, I would suggest that you want to take it up with the forming transitional president-elect.
Yeah, I'm sent one to Pence and to President Trump.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Okay.
Well, this is very good. It does rhyme with some of the things going on over in England. And if you're online, there's a group called foreclosure, the fraud of the bank.
Okay.
And it's very large, and it involves a gentleman named Tom Crawford who went into a huge battle over his house. He's still in it. And there's been a lot of kinetic protest and a lot of constitutional group work over there in that realm, too. And I only say that because going after, you know, high power that is, it's pervasive all around, and it's the same kind of system.
Okay. I don't have internet, so I can't be doing that. But I do have a friend that listens to the news and the like, because God's given her that assignment, and she found out from the British news that Queen Elizabeth says that Obama is not going to give up the presidency. And I'm seeing this through the eyes of the Book of Exodus. God told me in the 90s, today is parallel to Egypt. And so I'm watching this as it moves on, and writing poetry about it besides, about how it really fits the scene. If he's not going to give up his office, he's the Pharaoh. And so Trump is the Moses. And so we need to keep praying for them to stay alive. But I'm going to believe, and God has never said this to me, but George Washington was shot multiple times, and it never penetrated his body.
He was shot at 200 times, and he never even had a. He might have had a hole or two in his coat, and that was it.
Yeah, okay.
I know that.
You just told me something I didn't know. I knew he'd been shot 17 times by one Indian. My gun never misses. And another one 11 times, and my gun never misses. And another time, and I've got a Bible that tells all that. Magnificent Bible called the Founder's Bible that's got a lot of our history. And you can get it through Kenneth Copeland and probably Wall Builders.
Hmm.
It's a magnificent Bible. I just, oh my goodness. What they're doing is they're using the commentary is our history. What our forefathers said about or did about or how they lived that particular issue in one particular scripture. It's a magnificent Bible. And that fact is it's been a tremendous help for me for my court papers.
Good.
Be glad to get back into court because I know that one of these days it's going to work. It's going to happen. So, fact is, July the 7th, I'm 81 and I'm acting every bit of it, okay? But on the inside of me, I got a lot of life. And July the 7th, the Lord said to me, "Fear not, my daughter, your season is approaching. You will rise up." Well, I can just barely get around right now. Things are going to change, financially as well as physically. Things are going to happen, and I'm living by faith. I'm not trying to do some funny stuff. Okay. So I don't know whether I said anything to help anybody or not, but.
Well, we're just glad you're doing what you're doing. We thank you because, you know, everybody.
Well, I thank God for you people. My goodness.
Everybody doing, you know, going up and doing what you're doing, you're really planting seeds and growing plants, and you're educating these people that are really useful idiots. That's what.
and I'll give you some more about my brief or my affidavit. I put one page was part of Banker's Manifesto of 1892 that talks about how the banks were dealing with the bankers, not the bankers, the legislators and the politics and the judges. So I'm incriminating them with that. Plus, I'm using the proclamation that was just posted just recently, and the power of authority. Those are my attachments to my brief. So there's a lot of paperwork. It was really heavy. I couldn't carry it by myself. It was too heavy.
Wow.
So I did that on purpose to educate whoever reads the paper. And I know that they're going to be horribly mad. And the fact is, I know some of the legislators are going to be mad because I've already experienced it with them.
Yeah, they don't like to be woken up.
Yeah. I've had visitations from the marshals, and they tried to divert my activity, and, well, I was nice to them. I gave them a little understanding of the history and a little bit of understanding scripturally, and I sent it to him personally like he wanted me to, but this one I sent to the marshal's office. That's not what he wanted to go, because I was making the judges nervous. I loved it.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate you people very, very much.
So does anybody else have anything to report? Do you have any cases coming up or anybody that you're helping? Or do you have, more intel on things that are going on, like the Bundys or Standing Rock? Or?
Yeah. Hey, Laura.
Yeah. Hi, Terry.
This is Terry in New Jersey. Have you been following the Pizzagate story lately?
Yes.
Because did you see the article in Breitbart?
I don't know which one. What was it that they rescued 400 kids recently?
Well, this one is about a month old, but it's very it's a real revelation. Just because what it says here is Blackwater founder and former Navy SEAL Eric Prynne told Breitbart News Daily on SiriusXM that according to one of his well-placed sources in the New York Police Department, the NYPD wanted to do a press conference announcing the warrants and additional arrests they were making in the Anthony Weiner investigation, but received huge pushback from the Justice Department. Now, there's a couple other paragraphs that I want to bring to your attention here, because it says here, from what I understand, up to the commissioner or at least the chief level in the NYPD, they wanted to have a press conference, and DOJ, Washington people, political appointees have been exerting all kinds of undue pressure on them to back down. He added, from what I understand, up to the commissioner or at least the chief level in NYPD, they wanted to have a press conference, and DOJ, Washington people, political appointees have been exerting all kinds of pressure. I think I just read that. But in any case, what it goes on to say is he noted that the FBI can investigate these matters, but they can't convene a grand jury. They can't file charges. I mean, this is bizarre because you have the top leadership in the police department, New York Police Department, want to go before the grand jury, but they won't let them.
Yeah, because they're all in, because all these people that are trying to fight them are the ones that are involved in it.
I know. I think it's just kind of bizarre. I sent this to the leadership, and I'm wondering, why don't they make contact with the police department or at least the author of this article and try to give them a little education on the grand jury? Because what they're doing by blocking access is illegal.
Can you bring this up on the Monday night call?
The funny thing about it is, I'm not sure, but I sent an email with this article, and highlighted these things, and I sent it to Jan, and Jan was pretty dismissive of it, and I don't understand why, really.
What did he say?
I'll tell you what he said. Hold on a second. Basically, he said that, let me look up Jan here. He basically said that, well, we're aware of the situation. Oh, here it is. Wait a minute. Well, I'll tell you what. Go on with your discussion, and mm-hmm. I'll try to find what Jan's response.
Okay. Well, one of the articles I read is that they made they rescued 400 children and almost arrested about the same amount of people, and so they are making progress. But it's like,
well,
they had
something I heard, Laura, Jan, Kansas, is that it was on a Patriot call, you know, a Patriot group like ours, but that there's a citizen, that it's so, you know, it's worldwide, and it, there's a citizen's investigation starting to, what do I want to say, starting to rumble. Like the citizens
right.
are taking it. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
So you
because,
heard of that?
Right. Because waiting for them to do anything is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know.
And then if
and
we.
I found Jan's response. I'll just give it to you now. It says, I watched the videos before. I think the NYPD one was a couple weeks ago. I couldn't find a date on it. The DOJ is so corrupt, you wonder if we will ever get movement. Well, of course. I mean, you're not going to, you know, the DOJ isn't going to do shit. So, you know, that's why I'm saying that the NLA should reach out to the New York Police Department and kind of educate them on the grand jury.
Well, that's why I think you should get on the Monday night call and discuss it instead of just one, you know, just Jan's opinion.
Right.
I think it's a good it's a good subject to talk about. I mean, really.
Well, I think this. Yeah, I think that if the NLA got involved with this and started working with the NYPD, they would get traction and they would get a good reputation. I think it would be great.
I do too.
Okay, I'll be on Monday too to chime in on that because I believe.
Okay, cool, Harley. That's good.
That's an issue with regular law enforcement being blocked, and. The other side of the coin, then using mercenaries, black ops, and hidden instructions and pressure on people's careers and everything else to block things. So, you know, that's RICO. That's every bit of corruption that we can't stand. I wanted to chime in about the story of the 400. I passed that story around big time on Facebook, but I captioned it at the very top with, it was a 2010 sting.
Oh.
That started in Canada, okay? It went for 3 years. In 2013, they had all this. And the reason I posted it, and I always post dates, and I always, you know, say why if I'm pushing something that's old news, why it's relevant, right? Because I hate that, recycling stories that they do.
Right.
But the reason I thought it was very important is because they had the whole food chain from Child Protection Services and the lawyers and the cops and the whole sort of vertical monopoly, you might say, out there in Canada. And as we're finding out, Canada is not this wonderful bucolic place. It's incredibly mobbed up with the French and Jesuit mob, okay? And so the things that happened between the States and Canada on the Great Lakes are absolutely revolting. They're very well documented among the Native Americans especially. And I wanted to drop one other piece for people. Pizzagate is kind of a cul-de-sac. There's some very, very good truthers on YouTube who are digging into the strange coincidences of why the owner went there to the White House 5 times, and he's this big apparatchik in Washington, and there's Haiti charities right on the same block. And one of the things they're doing is they're using this for flypaper or a honey trap. And not that it doesn't have validity. We know it has huge validity. But what they're trying to do is what they always do, and that's throw the smaller fish into the net. Okay. With that information known, Corbett of Corbett Report, who lives in Japan and does excellent, excellent YouTube work, some of the highest quality, I'd say, and a lot of people.
Yeah, I like him too, yeah.
He has set up a special part of his website for this.
Good.
People want to go there and they want to chase this rabbit hole, that's a good place to go because you're always having to debunk things as you go along because of all the you know, crazy stuff they intentionally have sickened the whole community with online.
Right.
But anyway, just putting that out there for folks.
Thanks.
By the way, Stephen Colbert had a very good video on civil forfeiture. Just type in YouTube, Stephen Colbert, civil forfeiture. And he does it in a very humorous way but he shows out all these people are losing, you know, even up to their houses on relatively petty crimes.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. Good. I'm glad. When did he do that?
Oh, he did this a long time ago, but it's on YouTube.
You mean was it when he had the Colbert Report?
No, this was he's got a new show on Sunday.
Yeah.
1 hour.
Yeah, right, okay.
That's what the Banker's Manifesto is.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Colbert. The other guy, the British guy.
Yeah, you're talking about John Oliver.
John Oliver, yeah, that's it.
John
Oliver, and then Civil Forfeiture. I don't know how I came up with that, but I did it. And even when I did Colbert, it came up. So.
Well, John Oliver even did this thing where he wanted to find out how easy it would be to be a debt collector. So, you know, so he said that he bought, like, put out $60,000 and bought like $300,000 people's debts by
medical
with $60,000, and he could do whatever. I mean, you know, you can have a phone bank and start harassing these people. So what he did, he wanted to see how simple it was and really how you don't have to really have anything. You just have the money, do it. And so what he did was he forgave everybody's debt. He stopped
and I think
it, right
it turned
there.
Out to be, because I watched that and I loved it, it turned out it was all medical, first of all.
Oh, yeah, medical bills, right.
Exactly. And he bought it for pennies on the dollar, see? So
yeah.
When he released the debt, he actually, you know, quintuple, whatever the amount of money he actually spent. But it proved a great point. And actually, I think maybe all of the stuff that he bought was past the collectability.
Oh, right, yeah.
Was proving the point that they buy this stuff on speculation, and then they depend on people's ignorance of the law and the rules,
right.
And they go and just harangue them to death.
Right.
You know, they scare them to death, and, you know.
Yeah, I know what they do. I've done it, but I always responded and got them to stop right away. I have really good letters. Send it back.
By the way, if you want to read that article on Breitbart, you're not going to find it when you do a search on Pizzagate. You have to type in Prince or Eric Prince.
Okay, now one of the things that if you guys know who Ben Fulford is, he was saying that, I mean, I don't believe everything he says, but it sounded like Prince and the old Blackwater, even Prince's sister, they're working for the good guys now. I don't know, you know. Like, somehow they cut, you know, maybe people are cutting deals and they're changing teams and jumping ship and whatever, you know.
It might be Paul getting saved.
Something,
people,
yeah, I know.
You're bringing up that subject. I got a friend that's an intercessor, and God showed her, lifted her up into the spirit and showed her how the demons are holding Hillary from repenting, and that we are not, that we need to be forgiving her so that she can be set free, because she will have a great testimony. Now, the thing that I'm going to add to it is I'm going to have to pray that she stays alive, because people that come out of the Illuminati and out of these organizations, they try to kill them. And there's numerous of people that are being killed, and one's been put in a mental institution just recently, because they come out of the Illuminati and they start telling about what's going on, and then they get shot.
Right.
Okay, so we need to be praying for Hillary to get saved and everybody else to forgive her so she can.
That's a good thought.
Yeah.
Well, I know, but she still needs to be held accountable.
It doesn't mean that she can't be held accountable, but...
That's right.
With the not wanting to press charges against her, and, oh, they're nice people, bullshit. They're not nice people.
No.
They haven't been nice people since Arkansas. I mean, anybody who says that they're nice people, I don't know what they're talking about. And so, yes, I mean, it's really not even up to us. It's up to God to forgive her. But I just think that it's ridiculous for anybody, including Mr. Trump, to say, well, it's okay, let's just move on. No, the hell it is. He's not the one who got hurt. He's not the one who's got dead family members or a home that got taken away from him or a reputation that got ruined. I mean, no, they're not forgiven until, I mean, even, and then I'll quit, but the Lord Jesus Christ only forgives when somebody repents. He stands ready to forgive, but forgiveness is not put into play until the person repents, turns around, goes 180 degrees, and quits doing it. And
well,
the conditional forgiveness is conditional even with God. It just
is.
Even though Christ already bought our forgiveness, we don't get the forgiveness until we repent and quit doing it. And Carly, before you hang up, it's Jan in Kansas. I've tried those two numbers that are listed in NLA for you, and I can't get you either way on either one of them.
Oh,
is there?
You should be able to get through and leave me a voicemail if I don't recognize the number and pick it up. But I'll give it on this call. It should be.
Oh, no. Well, is one of the numbers end in 8484? Does your number end in 8484?
No.
Does it end in 0250?
No.
Okay, well, that's why I can't get you then.
05250 was a zip code that I used to live in.
Oh, okay, you might want to check the...
Okay, well, I'll give it on this call. I don't care because I want it to be on the website. It's not a worry of mine. It's 802-379-6811.
Okay, that was 802-379-6811.
Yeah.
And again, my area code, when I call you, it will be 913.
All right, Jan, 913.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, no, we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Laura?
Yes.
Okay, this is Watchdog Mike from Buffalo area.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing? You guys sound good tonight. Okay, I was in court today twice with a friend of mine helping him out. The first one was a traffic, and it was an appeal in the Supreme Court in New York, Erie County. And the reason it wasn't an appeal process was because my friend filed a federal case involving a traffic citation he received. As soon as he got it, within 72 hours, he had it filed, and he turned back the traffic ticket to the corresponding court and the police officer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they failed to take heed of the remand in federal court and continued and convicted him in the lower court. Well, we got into the main court today, and, of course, there was no... In the appeal, the judge said, well, he's going to take under advisement the five-minute oral arguments that both people had. And the only thing the opposing attorney for the town, which he's suing, came back and said there was no remand. And in the federal court, I even talked to the clerk, and she said that there is absolutely no type of paperwork that they issue or can issue or will issue stating that it has been filed in the federal court. However, he has a paper in his brief from the court showing that it had been filed in the federal court, and they're just sitting on it. So we're waiting to hear what the judge is going to say in that matter. But like John says, as soon as you get a traffic ticket, is to take it into federal court. But in New York, I don't know how you can get any kind of documentation with an index number or any type of verification of the case to present to the lower court in order for them. They said they wanted to see a bona fide, certified letter from the court stating that it has been filed in that court and that the process is underway and they've accepted it. And talking to the clerk in the federal court, she said that they don't do that and couldn't do it. So that's some issue that has never been addressed to my knowledge on the Monday night call when John talks about taking it right away into the federal court.
Well, then okay. I would bring that up.
Right, right. Okay, that's issue number one. Then we went down to the clerk's office of Erie County And my friend was in the process of filing by affidavit a status, his status, and a state form for exemptions, for tax exemptions, whereby you're not liable for the taxes, for taxes. And it was a state form, even, and it was all notarized and everything. It was about 6 pages. And he gave it to the lady who was the clerk, and she went with the paperwork and talked to an attorney and came back and said, I'm sorry, she threw it at us, and she said, I'm not filing it. I'm not filing it. My friend looked at me, and he was just dumbfounded. And he goes, well, she never files none of my papers.
Oh, so she doesn't. But see, that's a felony. That's a felony for not doing it.
Okay, hold on a second. She walked over and was talking to a table with 6 attorneys in it. So I just nonchalantly walked over to her, and I said, excuse me. I says, and what is your reason that you're not going to file our paperwork? She looked at me, and she said, because it's fraudulent. I said, fraudulent? How could it be fraudulent? They're your forms. She goes, well, we have the option, the discretion, to either file them or not file them. And I says, really? I says, it's my understanding that it's a felony if you don't do your job and if you fail to do your recording, especially when it's by affidavit. She said, it doesn't matter. So I walked back over to my friend, and I said, did you? That's what I started to tell him. He goes, no, never mind. He said, I heard her. She talked loud enough I could hear every word she said. So he got on the phone, and he called. I'm not sure exactly who he called, somebody pretty high up. And they said that New York was one of the states where the clerks have discretion whether they can file them. If they want to file them, they can file them.
Oh.
But they don't have to file them. And I never heard of that, nor did I ever hear the Monday Night John talk about that.
Oh, wow. That would be interesting. And see, he's in New York, so that's another good subject to bring up about that.
Right.
Because
right.
he may even have a remedy for that.
I hope so.
Well, on that thing he read Monday night, he said that there was, I think, 13 states that didn't even have, they say, didn't have constitutional rights anymore. So, I mean, if they think they took away the constitutional rights, then they would probably violate the U.S. Code, too.
Absolutely.
I think New York was one of them, with Rhode Island and a bunch of the eastern seaboard states.
Yes, I remember him reading about New York, yep. Okay, and then after we went there, of course, we went and got something to eat, and we went up to the second court, which was in North Tonawanda. And this case here, my friend was suing the big cable company over here because they had shut the service off and for 2 months, but they still billed him for that. And it was over $200 a month for this year. They even tacked on money for it. And they just kept escalating the prices of it. And he was going to take that exemption form on the taxes to the court to show that they were committing fraud, and it was an unjust enrichment. And he presented all, well, he had, I'm going to step back a second here. He had the case already won because Time Warner, who was the cable company, never appeared in the court case. It was a $5,000 claim in small claims court. And the judge had ruled in his favor, and he had a $5,000 judgment against Time Warner. Well, the attorney for Time Warner came back and filed papers into the court stating that they were never served. And the reason they never appeared was because they were not served properly. Okay. So they brought it up for trial today. Well, it was a hearing, not a trial yet. It was a hearing to find out whether or not they were going to revoke the original judge's order for restitution for him or for winning his case, or if they were going to remand it and go back in and try it all over again. So we go into the court, and the judge said to him, he says, well, you're the plaintiff in the case, Mr. Buchek. He says, so go ahead and what do you have to say? And he says, well, I stand on my paperwork. And he says, number one, he says, the attorney doesn't have any standing in this court. How do I know he's even an attorney for the cable company. There's been no papers filed in there. And he's gone, and he said a couple other different things, too, that it was just unjust enrichment. And I already have the judgment in my favor, because if they didn't think it was important enough to show up the first time, then why do they think it's important now that they're coming back in now? And it should be res judicata. So the judge looked at him and he says, the attorney never even said anything. And he looks at my friend and he goes, well, he says, you don't have to worry about this attorney, he says, because the cable company, Time Warner, is a very, very big corporation. And he says, they have many attorneys. And he never even questioned whether or not this lawyer had any standing or if he even was a part of Time Warner. There was no documentation at all. And he said to my friend, he says, in light of the case, he says, I'm going to bring it back. He says, I'm going to revoke the original order of the other judge, giving you the win in the case, because you did not label your paperwork properly. You were the plaintiff, and the party that you sued was Time Warner. And he says, that's correct. And he says, well, it's not Time Warner that you're suing. And he says, well, who am I suing? Who am I supposed to sue then? He says, well, I shouldn't tell you this, but I'm going to. He says, it's Time Warner Incorporated.
Oh, brother.
Can you believe that?
Oh.
And so he says, I'm going to set this up for trial, and you're going to have to go through the whole trial all over again.
Oh, because of incorporated, he didn't.
Yes, he didn't put that on his paperwork. And I told him, I said, Shane, I says, what you got to put on there? And the next time you do any paperwork, you want to put notice to principal is notice to agent. Notice to agent is notice to principal at all. And that includes everybody that's involved in the entire conglomeration. And he goes, oh, okay. So that's how he's going to have to label his paperwork.
Wow.
So these courts are just so unbelievable that there's no restitution, there's no justice at all in any of these cases.
I know.
They're all one,
it doesn't
all one
have
side.
To do with that, yeah.
And I told my friend, I says, well, how can he hold you to the same standards as they do a lawyer when you're not a lawyer? And he goes, that's a good point. He says, I'm about to bring that up. I says, yeah, you should have brought it up when you were standing and talking to the judge. And the more they talk, the more things I would think of to tell him, you know.
Right.
Well, was that small claims court?
Yes, it is.
Well, they're not supposed to hold you to the same standards in small claims. I just asked about that last week.
Exactly. I know.
Yeah.
I know that.
Okay.
But they do. They do it anyway. They do whatever they want to do, just like that clerk. You know, she didn't want to file them papers because they know where this is all going. And they're just trying to put a wall up against all of us for doing anything that we try to do to get any kind of remedy whatsoever, no matter what court we're in, whether it's Supreme Court or small claims court or family court. It doesn't matter in New York. So, anyway, that's what I had to. Oh, the other thing was, does anybody know the law? See, well, if New York is exempt from the clerks filing the paperwork, then that law doesn't really apply to them. I mean, what can you do? I try to find a clerk, try to find a bailiff. I was going to have her try to get her arrested, but there was no bailiffs at that time in the clerk's office. They were all
right. Well, I would like to hear John's take on that, and even what's his name, the common lawyer, and see what he says.
Yeah,
I'm sure Brent and those guys would tell you very straightforwardly that there's no exception by state that there's a duty to file. And it was very strange because I had just recovered from 30 hours in solitary when they stole my house, and I was in a hotel, and on the bookshelf I was looking for something to read, right? And so I come across this book of the rules of Vermont for judicial. And I went to the section on the court clerk, and I found all of this sort of case work on, the disputes of, like, how they should file it. Well, they should file it so that it can be understood and found, and that's really the only rule. But they did have a duty to file in the same way for each client, regardless of what they thought of the paperwork. It was told to them very clearly that it's up to the two sides to fight over it. It's not up for judicial judging between her and her masters above her whether it's convenient or not to file something.
Right.
And they're prescribed. It's worse if you're above a clerk. Say you're the judge and you derail or lose conveniently somebody's paperwork on purpose. But there's like 10 years for the clerk. And you don't have to have her arrested. You just start the proceedings. That's my take.
What do you do? Start the proceedings and they're filing criminal charges against her, or start a civil action for her denying your rights under the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution? Because if one state allows them to do it, then they're going to have to follow suit as well.
Well, I think this is another great teachable moment, and I agree with her that we should bring this up while it's the Brent question time, and we'll get Gerard and John and Brent to weigh in on it and how we should go forward, because I think it's very germane to whether we get success or we understand how to use the leverage of holding these people to professional responsibility. And we have something in our back pocket right away. I'm saying, theoretically, we're going to have something in our back pocket right away to start that proceeding. We can show it to her. We can put her on warning. This is your, name on this thing, and it's going to go into the system right now. You don't file this right now.
Exactly. I agree with you. But when we run across that wall, like you said, if we don't have anything behind us, it's like both of us look at each other like, now what do we do? Maybe that's right. Maybe it's not. If it's not, then how do we counter it?
The sheriff can actually come back to the courthouse and file that for you. I mean, you talk about this in front of the boys, and they'll have some good stories, I think, and useful info for us.
Well, not only that, but you can also write to your elected servant representative, or your friend can write to their New York, or whatever state, I guess, New York State elected servant representative, and ask the representative to contact the judge to find out what statute the judge stood on to make such a ruling as that. You know, the more people, the wider we make our swath, even though we know that they might write back and say, I can't do that, or blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, the wider we make our path, the more they know, here we come. Because here we come. I mean, we're not, we're going to do it legally, but they need to help us sort through all this. They're the ones who made the legislation that passed the thing that the judge could say whatever he wants to say. So
right.
We need to get them in on it, too.
Yeah.
And it's our right to do so. It's our right to do so.
Right.
Well, it's
right.
It's 10 o'clock, so I'm going to stop the recording and meet everybody on Monday night, because I'm really curious about that conversation. So.